Luckily, the band was not involved with this. So we are still perfect little boys that don't do anything bad.
You mean
Just
you weren't arrested?
we weren't there. It was actually the crew. The crew was driving across the country, and the band had some other obligations, so we had to fly like the day before the gig.
Oh, so the rumor's not exactly true because they didn't say that, but I'm glad to get
It's
it cleared up.
a little fluffed up, I'm sure. But remember the band, we are perfect, so and we don't do
Yes.
anything bad, so
No.
wouldn't have been us anyway.
But your crew has a bunch of marijuana in the van.
Crew had a bunch of pod, yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Wet Podcast. I'm Barry, that's Brian. We've got a really cool show for you. I'm very excited. We have some special guests, dogs in a pile. We've got some news. We've got some news about us at Bonnaroo that I'm very excited about. I'll share with you in just a minute. First of all, I need to explain why Russ is not here. Russ is
Oh
in
yeah,
his
forgot.
pack.
It felt like something
We're
was
missing
missing around here.
somebody.
Hey Russ, where you at, man?
He is in
You're
his
late.
happy place. He is in the bus with a whole bunch of other VW enthusiasts at Bugapalooza, a fundraiser here in Chattanooga for the Ronald McDonald House that Russ is very much involved with the planning of, but he's also been over there camping in his bus for the last two nights. So
Yeah, it's a it's one of the bigger Volkswagen meets in the Southeast. Maybe not bigger as far as how many people show up or how many entries there are, but as far as recognition and tradition, most anybody who's in that in the car club in the Volkswagen ethos, this is a stop because it's a great camping spot, and especially if you get good weather and
which they did.
in Chattanooga this weekend, holy geez, this is what we live for in life is the kind of weather we're getting. So he'll have plenty of pictures to show from some of their they do contests, first in place, second, best ridiculous car, best custom car, best original. There's Herbie the Beetle, if you know the reference. There'll be
You're
plenty
right.
of those.
The love bug.
The love bug, and it's so much fun. And he does, he's high up on that. He's on the board. He does tech. He's not just an attendee, so he
And
couldn't make it
they
today.
raise a lot of money for Ronald McDonald House, which is awesome.
They do. I would say we're in our 25th year of this thing. Could be longer than that. Been going for a while. So it's another one of the, especially around here, but I'm sure where you live, you have a lot of cool April events going on too. It's one of the circled on the calendar for many around here, April events. So Russ will be back with us next week, and he was bummed on our text and email threads. Like, damn it, won't be able to make it for the dogs in a pile conversation today because we were really excited about that. Again, we'll get to that in a second.
And thank you, Brian, for setting that one up because that was a good pull.
And thanks to their management, who were very, very quick to make it happen.
Made it work on a Sunday.
Yeah. Didn't even ask us to change it. Well,
No, they were.
we won't go there, but they didn't change the change. The time did not change. They Our original schedule time worked out beautifully, so it's great. But we got something cool coming up that I'll let you start, Barry.
Yeah, we C3 reached out, our buddy Brad Parker, Mr. Everywhere, all the time, social.
Mr. Not Festival.
But he C3 had an idea. They want to do some thing. They want to partner with some podcasts, us included. I don't know that I'm going to mention the others because that may or may not happen. So I don't want
Yeah,
to go there
there's
yet.
still
But
it's still in the very beginning stages, but not in a maybe stage. Like
yeah, no, it's gonna
this is gonna
happen.
happen, and we are, I'll just speak for myself, really excited about this aspect of Bonnaroo that we've never been able to do before, and it's gonna be really fun.
Absolutely. We're working with them to figure out how to do a live event in Centaroo that will be recorded and will become a podcast. And so
And it'll be through the primarily just the Planet Roo
Planet Roo and their
umbrella.
charitable things that they do. So we'll coordinate with them to give them some love and some attention, but they wanted to also give us some love and attention. So it's
a very cool synergy.
Really cool.
And I don't want to try to make this sound like huge announcement. Stay tuned, guys. Like I don't know. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's going to be neat.
I don't care if it's just you and me.
Yeah,
and Russ. I'm excited. I'm going to be there. It's cool.
It's just another thing of the countless, never-ending list of things curated and programmed by this festival from every square inch of this. Of this farm,
yeah,
and how it never stops growing and trying new things. It might, whatever we do, might be the least cared about thing of the weekend. That's fine too. It's just they always are trying new things, and then this year they asked us what we thought, and we in the pre-show meeting, I just said real quick, as long as I don't have to do anything overly strenuous other than like carry some bags and show up, I don't need any more details. I'm in.
Yeah,
so another exciting thing for us, and you know the list of exciting things is never ending for every Bonnaroo attendee.
So thanks to them, and we look forward to it. We'll have some more conversations this week and next, and we'll figure out exactly what we're going to do. But we're very excited about it. So all right, so there's that, and so April kind of feels like the start of festival season. Coachella is going on. There's some news out of that you were telling me about, and I've watched a little bit, just a little bit on the YouTube of some of their coverage just to see what it looked like. I'm not really one to sit around and watch a live concert on television, but I wanted to see how it was done. It was done pretty well, but they had some issues with some.
Something
you would not think of in this day and age of an event that has been around for a while that they would have a problem with. But apparently they did with traffic, right? They're getting people in and out. So
yeah, I don't know the logistics, the terrain, the landscape. I don't even remember where Coachella is held. It's in one of the valleys outside of a city, right? I don't even remember. Southern, I'm sure. It's pretty south. But all of a sudden, something that Bonnaroo kind of created, or at least were first known for, this amazingly hard to comprehend times waits to get into to just park your car, which has been all but eliminated. I mean, if you sit for 2 or 3 hours, then you're having a bad day, and you probably had the worst day of anybody else.
Right.
Maybe 5 hours. Somebody's got that bad story. But it used to be 12 was everybody's story. And now this year, Coachella, I don't know how many percentage camp. There's multiple reports to the fact that Festive Owl retweeted and we'll call it reported on, you know, put it out there as official information, that it was widespread that there was 12-hour waits to get into Coachella. What we talked about this a little earlier, Barry, we didn't look it up. Only their way we could know. Coachella started in what? 99, 2000, it was before Bonnaroo, but not much before. 27 years later, now you're having 12-hour waits to get in? What in the world happened? It feels like, because I didn't see the outrage continuing, that maybe that was something that was just total unforeseen issue. We don't know the details. The likelihood of that is very true, probably. And maybe they fixed it very quickly.
Wow, 93. Traces back to
93. Dude, wow.
Pearl Jam, so there you go.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to call it funny, but it's kind of funny.
It does seem a little unusual that would be an issue, but...
kind of funny.
So that's this weekend, and you've got 420 next weekend in Atlanta.
Yeah, I hope you guys are a little bit interested in seeing what it looks like. If you're a festival goer of the South, my guess is you probably will be, because 420 Music, Sweetwater, the brewery, 420. That, speaking of jam bands who we're about to speak to, Dogs in a Pile, that's all they do for the longest time, and they still pretty much do it. But they've moved the location a couple times, and it's been... There's been a lot of concern in whether they'd even be able to keep this festival alive. And the biggest part, not to go too far into the weeds on this, was the guns and parks bill in Georgia, if you remember that, Barry, from 5 years ago, 4 years ago, where all of a sudden there was some restrictions taken off on whether guns are allowed in these public parks. While I agree with every single thing that the festival organizers probably feel about that, I don't know that I would have gone to the lengths that they did. They pulled the plug on where they were going, like Piedmont Park, pulled the plug on Centennial Park and Central Park. If you don't know Atlanta, I'm sorry, but I'll just Centennial and Piedmont are where Music Midtown and now Shaky Knees, and Shaky Knees was in Central for a little while. These are parks that have been used for major festivals. Their infrastructure is already there, and they pulled from to go to any of these places. Well, it's like, well, what in the hell are you going to do? You can't have a big festival if you're not going to go to a big festival site that is conducive for holding this. Well, they have found Pullman. Is it Pullman Farms? Shit, I'm sorry. I've been looking back and around. Pullman Yards. Pullman Yards. And I don't know anything about Pullman Yards. And my a good friend of mine who does a lot of marketing he's done some stuff for the show that none of y'all even know before. Some little stuff from in Atlanta. He's in design work, art gallery kind of stuff. And he's going with me, and he's got a connection to it too. And they're welcoming us in. And basically, we're going to come in to get a good look at the whole new venue. Cool. And I'll try to get some good audio or not audio for the show here, but visuals, what stages look like, the drive-by truckers. That's the main reason I'm there for the day. And next week, a little show and tell on that. And I hope that'll interest some of you, and we'll see how it goes. But looking forward to that.
And I know we're trying to plan a couple more shows. I know you're trying to hook up with some folks to talk about the 5K run.
The Crazy Roo Run. Yeah, I'm intrigued.
I can almost swear I remember you 10, 12, whatever years ago, maybe not that long ago, at Camp Nut Butter saying, guys, man, they're having a road race. That's the stupidest freaking thing I've ever heard.
I was hoping that's what you were about to say.
And now you're going to do it.
There's no chance that I didn't say anything other than these... I don't want to say I called them losers. Surely I didn't call them losers. But these insane weirdos need to be told to go back to bed.
Here's what's wrong with that idea when we first heard about it. It's in the morning. You've been up all night.
Yeah.
The farm is a dust bowl.
Yeah.
So you're going to get up and do that. And you're going to go run.
And it's Saturday, so you're...
There's no good reason to do this.
You're in your third day. No, there's not.
But you're going to do it.
There's not. And, I won't go into it much now, because when we do set up to talk to the people, I'll go into the more details of it. If you know me well, which most of you listening and watching this don't know me well, but you can take some guesses. If you know me well, you think this is like I'm pulling a joke. You're waiting for me to like say I showed up to like pop all your balloons and then run away. Like, no, I mean, I know I'm being silly as hell here, but it's a change, and I'm excited as I can be. So we'll stop there and we'll pick more up on it down the road.
All right, I think that's the news that we had, right?
Light news on Bonnaroo. We're looking for the tickets to sell out probably anytime based on the way that they've been using their social media, and we got to think that we're looking at a schedule drop.
Yeah.
Any moment. Like it seems like it's a Tuesday thing. Is it going to be, was it yesterday? Like, hey, we're doing a show on Wednesday. I mean, you know, as you guys likely know, we do these a couple days out. Was it yesterday? Will it be next Tuesday?
Right.
It's going to be here any minute, and I can't wait.
Yeah. So special, as I said, special show today. I'm very excited. Brian, you started doing, not deep dive yet, but you started putting together a playlist, and Dogs in a Pile jumped to the top for you.
Bring me back to my jam roots.
Absolutely.
I love it.
I started listening this week as well. I love it. And was so excited to find out that you had managed to get Brian and Jeremy.
Yeah, and thanks to them for everybody, too. We were able to put it together on the tour bus in between Wisconsin and whatever the hell they're going to next. So I look forward to this.
And this will be their first time on the farm, which is amazing, especially because I think I said it during the interview. I think they are just about as perfect a band for Bonnaroo that I can think of.
Agreed.
And so great interview with them, and I can't wait to see them here in Chattanooga this week, but more importantly, on the farm in Manchester. So here we go with Dogs in a Pile.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Jeremy and Brian, Dogs in a Pile. What a thrill. What a treat for us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
You guys are in Madison, Wisconsin currently. You will be here in Chattanooga Wednesday night, tonight, for people who are when they're listening to this show. But you're going to be on the farm in Manchester in June. And I think I can speak for Brian. You guys are probably our find of the schedule. I love what I'm hearing from you guys. Can't wait to see you.
Awesome.
Right, Brian? I'm not overstating that.
No, so far, I mean, we've just started our more in earnest dive into stuff we don't know. And you guys popped up quickly on my radar, and it's been a nice find. I got to start, though, real quick. The name of the band, I didn't get this immediately, and then a friend of mine was like, well, you know what that, and I don't know what it is exactly, we're going to go there, that's where I'm headed. You know, that's a Grateful Dead lyric, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm a Dead fan, right? Oh, yeah, you're a big Dead fan, right? You didn't catch on to that one? I'm like, Dogs in a Pile. Oh, yeah, nothing left to do, smile. Yeah, he's gone. Like, one of my favorite songs. Is the story as simple as, do you like that lyric, or is it have nothing to do with the Grateful Dead whatsoever?
No, that's highly accurate. In fact, when we first started playing together, the only thing that we all had in our back pocket was Grateful Dead songs. So we were just a cover band doing bars and stuff around the Jersey Shore. That's really it.
And that would have been what era was that first starting to come together? Where you were playing together, hitting a bunch of covers, jamming hard. What years were that?
That was 2018.
All right. So it wasn't that long ago. I mean, now it kind of was, but.
Yeah, it feels like ages ago. You know, COVID adds 10 pounds.
Well, COVID added about 50 years to everybody's life.
Yeah, the lost years. Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say the cover band thing, because I want to come back to that later. Because you guys, as Brian and I were talking before the show, you do a lot of covers, but you're not like any cover band that I'm familiar with the covers that you choose. So I want to come back to that in a little bit, because there's a whole website of all the covers that you've done, right? But anyway, this will be your first time at Bonnaroo, correct?
Yeah.
I always love to ask, we always like to ask, what are you, because this show, we've been doing it since 2018, and it's primarily about Bonnaroo. It's the reason we do it. What do you know about Bonnaroo? What is your perception? What do you think it's going to be like? I hope you know it's going to be hot. We can already go ahead and tell you that.
Hot as hell. That's what we're prepared for. intense, you know, lots of people, tons of production. Definitely, you know, a festival on a scale that we're not super used to, for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you, what kind of festival circuits have you guys been able to be on over the last, you know, I don't say post-COVID? Have you been able to hit a lot of the festivals, small, big, or otherwise, or more standalone shows? Or is it a mix of all of that?
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely done all sorts of junk. A good amount of festivals. The Peach Fest, which is likely now defunct. That was a big one for us. We did Summer Camp. That's a large festival, and that was like very exciting the first time we rolled through there. It's just definitely we're relatively familiar with how festivals work, but we do realize that Bonnaroo is like kind of like just on a slightly larger scale than anything we've really been involved with.
It's a rite of passage for many people, from attendees to performers to podcast host,
absolutely,
to a lot of different people.
Do you know, will you be there for a while? Are you gonna roll in, do your show, and leave, or are you planning on staying for a while?
I think you have like a day. We could hang for an extra day or something like that, right?
I think we have a day. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely gonna try to see some music, do some exploring.
But you guys have not is any member of the band wandered into Manchester in June before? Just as an attendee or anything. So this is a brand new experience all the way around.
Brand new, yeah. We've only been to Nashville and Chattanooga in Tennessee. Haven't done too much exploring.
Well, you've been to the best two cities in Tennessee. Those are the best.
That's right. The other one you can.
Knoxville and Memphis, if you get a gig that's paying, take it. But then get out of those cities as quick as you can.
Check out Graceland.
I will. Yeah. Get drive by Graceland if you need to, but yeah, then get out of here. Maybe Beale Street for some, and get out.
I will say your sound and everything is perfect for Bonnaroo, so you should fit right in. I've been listening all morning. I'm really excited to see you. When you guys started, what was the intent? I mean, you said you were doing covers, but also looking back at just doing some research, you guys are, several of you, Berkeley.
There's no shortage of classically trained talent in this band.
Correct.
Is that fair?
Also, I couldn't help notice, I mean, it's on your own bio, so you guys put it there, but a lot of your influences, I mean, from Zappa, who, you know, you can see back over my shoulder here, to Coltrane, to Miles, I mean, it's pretty eclectic. So when you got together, what was the, how did it go? Who said, here's what I want us to be, you know, here's what I envision for this band?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because we do, and oftentimes in a lot of ways, we kind of pull each other in opposite directions, but that all that like kind of pulling ends up guiding us into one sort of mode. So it works out, luckily, that all of our, you know, individual influences are so eclectic, because, and then we get to pull from all of these great traditions and kind of fall into that stuff as we please, or as we need to. So I wouldn't say that there's, you know, any one person pulling the string that makes us all go, but it's these five strings that are attached, all pulling wildly, that gets us, you know, gives us our push.
Are they easy conversations, or does somebody have to come in and fight for a song or a sound or a direction?
I'd say in general, conversations are easy, but it's not without like, okay, well, let's look at this from another perspective and work on it. You know, it's never like, we can't do it this way, but it's we'll go back and forth to find the best way to do it. You know,
Jeremy, Brian, or both, take this. Very simple question. Do you consider yourself a jam band? Is that still a term that is used, you know, this long after the jam band, really the whole ethos exploded over different generations, different culturally in different eras? Do you consider yourself a jam band?
We were kind of talking about this the other day. I feel like the term jam band is pretty broad. There are a lot of bands that fall under that umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like nobody has ever presented me a good definition for the word. And you know, I love good heady words. So like, if somebody can give me a good definition, let's go for it. But until I do hear a good one, like I struggle to identify with the term personally. And now that's not to say that like, sure, like I can see that we fully exist within this jam band scene, you know? But like there's so much more depth to music than that. So I personally struggle to identify with that. And like you know, you were saying, Barry, like Frank Zappa, you know, like what
is that? I was just getting ready to say he would be a jam band by that.
You know, sure, like the circuit maybe could be a good home for him because like how eclectic his stuff is and how accepting the jam band community is to styles and risks.
They just brought in Billy Strings with open arms, right? Like that, the jam band scene will embrace anybody if it's good and fun.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like that. We're just interested in making good music as best as we can, you know. And it is truly all over the place. Like it'll be, you know, heavy metal grooves 1 second, then it'll be a pop tune the next. You know.
Well, yeah, that's part of the ethos just as much as any as many other factors.
Well, I just started looking at the list because you and are you guys familiar with? Have you seen this set list? Of all, it's artists covered by Dogs in a Pile. Are you familiar with that?
Is that our Ghost Set? Is that our website, the Ghost Set website?
I think. It's just setlist.fm. But it lists all of the different songs or bands that you've covered. And I just wanted to say the first four.
Yeah, it's setlist.com. So they put their own, they put it together there. But go ahead.
But they've broken it down. You've done 324 Grateful Dead songs, 114 Stevie Wonder. Number four is 53 Fish songs. But number three is the one I wanted to mention, Vince Guaraldi Trio. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's Barry's account right there.
I love the fact that you're doing Linus and Lucy. So going back to the cover thing, who comes in and says, I think it'd be cool if we did this? Or
I remember the day you walked in with Linus and Lucy. I wasn't even in the band yet, but I was coming to see them play at
my house, right?
Yeah, it's his house in Alston, at school. And he walked in one day and was like, we should just do this cover. We should play Linus and Lucy. Here's how we'll do it. We'll play the head. We'll do this part, and we'll get out, and then we'll jam. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. Someone feels inspired, comes up with a cool idea, and if everyone's into it all at the same time, then... we get to work, we practice it real quick, or just talk about it, and then play it.
Yep.
But what's the, and I'm sorry to obsess about this, but I think it's just fascinating. Is it the song? Is it the fact that it would be cool and nobody would expect it?
Or does it maybe fit into a theme of a set list for the night, potentially?
These are all valid questions, and I'd say they're all right at one point or another. It's all entirely dependent. Like, sometimes it's just like, cool tune, we'll do it, whatever. Sometimes it's, hey, we're in this city or this state, like this is where this artist is from or things like that. And sometimes, yeah, it's kind of more mechanical than it is like an artistic choice in a way, but you know, the art comes from some you know, certain limitations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The Guaraldi, I mean, I just love. It's such a cool song, but I mean, you also do some Miles and some Coltrane, which is not easy to do. So, I mean, you guys take big swings too, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, very much in the Zappa vein, we like to challenge ourselves.
Not easy to do.
challenge ourselves and challenge the crowd, because that's when things are most satisfying, you know, when you learn something or feel something new.
Yeah, well, whether you consider yourself a jam band or not, you've got a lot of the ingredients that go into this scene, and that's what's drawn me in. I'm a big I'm a former big jam band head guy. I still love it. Don't follow it around and do the things that I used to do once upon a time, but I get the ethos and I love it. And part of the ethos was always that the, you know, the recorded music doesn't do it justice. You got to catch the live show. Didn't always subscribe to that theory because I know a lot of people in music recording. I don't know it myself, but I've been around it, and I marvel at wonderful recordings in studios. I really enjoy that. And I'm thinking, if you can't do that, then why do I have trust that you can do all these other things? And you know, the Grateful Dead sometimes were one of the worst live shows you're going to see that week, because just over the course of 60 years, sometimes that happens. But when I started catching some of your stuff online, the more professionally shot Baltimore 12-7, by the way, from a couple of years ago. Guys, that was tight, strong. I mean, flowed well, good cover, good song selection. How do you do song selections from night to night? Is that done an hour before the show? Is that done days in advance with some ideas of where you're going based on what city you're in? Is how much elaboration goes into that? Or is it quickly, let's go?
Yeah, it depends on the night. So a lot of nights, so it is like an hour before kind of things scramble. But we're trying to be better about it now. Brian has kind of taken up the lead on it, getting things done sooner, so we have a bit more time to live within the set list. You know?
Yeah, usually I send a template pre-sound check of a basic framework for how we could go about the set list. I don't know, but sometimes when we're on stage playing a certain set, I'll be thinking about, you know, as soon as we get off stage, I'll be thinking about songs for the next night, like things that we didn't really get to tonight, certain vibes or certain styles that we could get to tomorrow, or just certain songs that we haven't played in a little while. There are so many different ways to think about it, how it can match up with the city or, you know, certain fans that are going to be there. We usually confirm it together. And
is it a hard set? Can you change it in mid-set?
They usually change depending on the limitations of time, or just natural improvisation. Something just gets cut. It's like, maybe we should, you know, sometimes you don't even have to think about it. You'll just skip over a song, or we'll start jamming our way into this other song. It's like, oh, we're playing this song now.
Yeah, works better, you know, on accident. Serendipitous almost. Well, there's two of my favorite bands are Widespread Panic and Pearl Jam, and the way they put their set list together are fascinating and completely on different planets of how they do it. And there was a Earth Will Swallow You was the name of, I believe, the DVD from or the doc from Widespread Panic about 20 years ago, and they had the guy that color-coded like the entire song catalog, and like, these are the songs, and after every 3 days, that seemed to be the formula of every third day is when things start to flip. Do you have any formula as to, I mean, I know most bands in your genre are not going to play back-to-back stuff, but is there something, well, we played that 2 nights ago, can't do it tonight, you know, we're gonna do that next week in Denver, can't do that in Raleigh. I mean, do you even get that specific as far as songs, or is it more about how you feel in the moment or that day?
I would say we get pretty specific, and like, because it's really more of a feeling thing. Like when you know, some of these songs we've been playing now for like 4+ years, right? So like, if we just played one of them 2 nights ago, it may still feel a little fresh, and maybe we don't want to play it tonight, you know.
And does that matter based on how you've released music? Like I've worn out the latest studio recording, Bloom, right? Am I correct on the name there? Yeah, and that's what, year old? Year and a half old?
Maybe about 2 years now, right?
Is it 2 years old?
Yeah.
So that's new to me. That's the new album, and I really like it. Would like to hear some songs off of it. If that had come out like 2 months ago, would songs from that album be more susceptible to be in a set list, or does that not even factor into it? You're trying to put together the best live show possible.
Yeah, I don't know. That might not factor in, truthfully.
Yeah.
And the live show, you know, song rotation is so dense. It's like, 200-ish songs in all, right? Between covers and originals.
Maybe over 300, I think.
Yeah, so our pot to pull from is really deep, so.
One more on this, and I won't dwell on the set list anymore.
I had a couple more.
The one I had to ask about is, I had to double check on this. I thought I dreamed it, because I couldn't find it again when I was going through your sets. Mr. Banker from Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, so...
Right, you guys have covered this in live shows. I know you've done it on like a social channel, but you guys, this is in the rotation even on a small amount, right? Mr. Banker from Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah, so I think you might have seen that on a set list from an acoustic duo that,
okay.
That I do.
Okay, cool. Well, then good. I'm talking to the right person.
Yeah.
How the hell do you find that song, and why did you decide to play? I can go so deep with Lynyrd Skynyrd, I'm almost embarrassed. What a song. How did you pull that? How did that pull come out?
And even deeper than that that was one of my questions is that the goal is to go find the deep cut and, you found the song and you thought we should do this.
Or you just like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 8-Man, Kinks, same.
That's a good question. We definitely try to consider the level of like hipness of a certain cover. You know, you want it to be hip. You don't want it to be Psycho Killer every time. Something that everybody...
Yeah, please don't make it Psycho Killer every time.
The reason for that song is, that's another whole side of it. Is like our community is so dense and so connected that, you know, just friends of ours or fans will request or suggest a certain song. And usually they're like right on the, you know, not... A lot of the times they're right on the money with, you know, the fact it would be cool for us to cover or be appropriate for the city or whatever. But really just Jimmy's dad loves that song. He was like, can you please play this song? It's so good. Like
Jimmy's one of the early original members of the band, if I remember right, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. He's part of the, I guess the core three, if you want to call it that, in the band before Brian or I.
There used to be a band out of Atlanta called the Retreads that was a straight up cover band, and they used to do a stump the band thing. And when I was looking at your set list, like I kept thinking of them because I remember one of my buddies asked for a Don Ho song. And so my point is the fun is as an audience member, like I know that song. They're doing something that I'm familiar, but I can't think of it. Is it, from you guys, from your point of view, I can only guess you're on stage trying to watch the audience to see how long it takes somebody to figure out you're doing a Lynyrd Skynyrd song, or, you know, I'm guessing you can watch the faces like a Brian or me out there going, man, I know this song, but what is that?
Back to the bits of Raleigh, that definitely happens. You know, it's got like the low piano, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm like, not everybody picks up on that, but when the melody be it up, yeah, it's like half the room is like, oh, and then,
exactly.
Well, then you know, like you get into another jam band thing that's prevalent in the genre is like kind of the teases, right? The teases within the song, and I was stumbling through one of your songs on that Baltimore show, and you were doing. Is it Philosophy from Ben Folds or Give Me My Money Back, You Bitch, that song? And that wasn't on the set list. You just broke into it for a minute. And I was, Ben Folds, what's going on? You know, I was like, that's so cool. So is there a lot of that too? A little tease stuff here? We're going to, this happens to have the same chord progression. Let's do that for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's like, that's a big part of, you know, like some of us, you know, come from like the jazz type, you know, background, and quoting is a big part in jazz music, you know, like,
oh yeah, throwbacks, callbacks, all that kind of stuff.
So that like seeps into our music, and it's just like fun to do because it's like a little, you know, kicker, like, hey, who's paying attention, who caught
exactly
the board, you know? And like the crowd, you know, it doesn't really land on the crowd a lot of the time, which is pretty funny. But it's kind of more for us on stage, you know, and it keeps us engaged with each other and listening.
Well, you are picking a lot of music that a lot of your contemporaries probably haven't heard. Maybe they knew Ben Folds, maybe not. Quickly, you mentioned a minute ago, Jeremy, about when you guys, specifically you and Brian, joined the band. it was starting to come together out up in the Northeast, and a couple of you Berkeley kids, can't remember who is who, somehow all kind of get together. Brian, I think, didn't you show up kind of last as the as official member of the band or towards the end of that trajectory? Talk to me about that. Did you see these guys and just think this is something I got to do, or I need a band and here's one? Like, this one's waiting for me. Talk about that transition.
Well, I met Jeremy first on, like, a sidewalk at school. And then I met Sam. And Sam and I started talking right away about starting a band. This is, like, second semester of college. And, you know, we got a drummer. And we tried out a few keyboard players. And, like, none of them were working. So then I was like, oh, I should call Jeremy. And so basically, we started a band up there, had a couple of names. It was Scotch Bonnet, and then it was Otherwise Useless Children. And, you know, one summer, Jeremy, Sam brought Jeremy down to the Jersey Shore to start playing some music. And I guess that was Dogs on a Pile as soon as you got there, right?
It already was. Like, they had two, it was Jim on guitar, Sam on bass, Joey on drums, another guitarist, and some other keyboardist who was like kind of a flake. Yeah, so like that, the band kind of existed. Well, these two bands kind of existed simultaneously in some ways, which is kind of bizarre because it ended up being one band, of course. Yeah, so that first summer I went down, and then back to school, played, you know, our trio had some gigs. Or I guess it was a quartet, actually. We had a Berkeley drummer. We had some gigs. We actually did an ensemble class through the school. That was our band up there, which was pretty cool.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, Dogs was playing gigs, and we were like, you know, we had tunes in the Boston band, we'll call it, and like we brought some of those tunes down to the Dogs. And then like after a while we're like, well, you know, we have Brian, like we should try to use him. And we tried a couple gigs, and like those first few didn't really go the way that any of us expected. So it was kind of a slow start to getting the five of us all together. But eventually it did happen, and it made sense, and it totally worked. I grew my hair a little longer.
I want to go back a little bit to the improv thing. And how much fun is it to be in a band where I'm assuming you guys can challenge each other. When you were talking about the improv, I was thinking again about Zappa. And I'm going to name drop, but whatever. I got to interview Dweezil several years ago because he's doing Zappa Does Zappa thing.
Yeah, Frank's son.
And I remember saying to him, Zappa intimidates me because it feels like just as soon as I think I get the joke, he's making fun of me for getting the joke.
Oh, you just now got it there, bro.
Type, you know what I mean? It's a level and a level and a level. And I mean, it's so, man, so deep, but fun. And that's part of the fun. So I'm asking, my question is, how much fun is it to be around four other guys who are talented enough to do and get that kind of callback and that kind of jazz and funk and Zappa and whatever?
Yeah, funk's the word we've left out of this whole show so far. There is a level of funk in there,
right,
that I don't hear as much within the traditional blues-based sounding jam bands out there. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, yeah, the funk is definitely important because, you know, funk is in a lot of ways a basis for feel, right? Feeling funk and making it feel good is hugely important, right? If you can make a funk groove feel good, you can make a lot of grooves feel good. And so, yeah, and as far as, you know, us playing together and being able to challenge each other, it's huge. You know, something we're working on now is like leveling up our more free and open improv game. And so a lot of that has to do with challenges, you know, and pushing each other to go beyond what we're really comfortable with. So it's absolutely critical, you know, and if we're not challenging each other on stage, then the crowd is not being challenged by something that could be the greatest thing ever, you know?
Well, I don't have a whole lot more here for you. I don't want to keep you guys. I know you're on the road. You're you know, traveling shows late last night, and I appreciate you so much carving out a late morning for us on a weekend.
Thank you. That's no small ask,
and that's not lost on us. So thank you very much. I will speak in the present of the when this is released, y'all's Chattanooga show. I will see you tonight, so I will bother you to at least come say. Say hello and thank you to your PR and management for comping me for that, by the way.
Awesome, yeah.
But
it's
a couple things.
It's middle name, Brian Comp.
Yeah, Brian, let me in, please.
Comp me.
A couple of things. I guess I'll start with this real quick, and then I have two internet what are essentially rumors that I want to see if you guys can confirm. The I'm not blindsiding you here. But Jeremy, I went through your Instagram last night. All right, you're a keyboard player. You play all the keys, the pianos, the organs. You do that. You do that well. I figured that's your role in the band. Wasn't surprised by that at all. But the more that I went through, is there anything you don't play? Is there any instrument that you're not that good at? Because I can't imagine there is from instruments I didn't even know what they were. I honestly looked at it and said, I've been listening to music and watching music my whole life. I've never seen that thing. Is that just a hobby of yours? Let's just play every wacky thing out there.
Yeah, kind of in a messed up way for sure.
It sure seemed like it.
It's you get an amazing perspective learning a different instrument, because it's like it's like a brand new approach to music. And you know, I haven't been doing music that long, maybe 14 years now, which is a very long time.
Long enough.
That's like half my life, you know. But still, like, learning a new instrument is like a entirely new start, and so you glean all this great information from that, having that perspective.
Indeed.
What is that double decker? I bet it's not a B3 Hammond or anything, but maybe it is. But it's one of your key, you know, your player. And then you have what I can only describe as like a talk box kind of tube that you're playing along with it. I don't hear talk box. You know, I think Peter Frampton when I think of talk box. I don't hear that. What in the hell was that? Do you know what I'm? Hopefully, I'm not blindsided here on something you don't remember what I'm talking about.
It's probably, if it's a tube going into my mouth, probably the melodica, which is like it's a free reed instrument, kind of like a cross between an accordion, a harmonica, and a regular keyboard.
And so you're just adding you would play a horn instrument almost into your keyboard playing. Then I guess.
Yeah, it's like a keyboard with breath control for like dynamic and some, you know, tonal aspects.
Never seen anything like it. And then there was some other thing that had keys. It looked like I don't know, a saxophone, but it was a keyboard, and then you were blowing into it too and playing it. I mean, I'm telling you, you find the whack. Am I seeing that right too? What in the hell was that?
That's probably also the melodica. You can have a tube.
Just a handheld version.
Yeah, or you can have like a straight pipe, like a trumpet-type mouthpiece.
Yeah,
he's also got the vocoder on the mini cord where you can it looks like he's just speaking into a microphone, but it's connected to his synthesizer where he's playing the notes, and then like robot voice kind of with chords and notes.
So it has got that talk box thing. Nice. A little bit real quick before, while we're talking about what you guys play, Brian, I just had to ask on your Stratocaster, the one you play the most, is that a Dale Earnhardt 3? Just a big 3 on there?
Yeah, it is.
Are you a Dale guy?
Yeah. For some reason, I just like got into NASCAR a few years ago, and
because he's been dead before you were maybe born, or I don't know. I mean, your favorite baseball player could be Babe Ruth, just because you weren't alive when he was there, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I watch races currently today too, and but I just love watching videos and learning about him. He was just such a cool figure.
Cool.
You know, cool.
Don't see many threes on guitars outside of Nashville, but respect.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was something like, you know, ironic in there somewhere. Like maybe this guy's a a Dale, dude. That's pretty neat. I couldn't go without asking that.
Brian, you're the one doing the set list. Have you started thinking about Bonnaroo's set list, or is it too far out? And are you?
I have, actually.
Okay.
I think it's going to require a mean chop shop at some point.
One of the things that we, as fans, Brian has been to all of them. I've been to 18, I guess, of all of them.
Effectively,
one of the things,
we've been to all of them, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that we love is that it is the fans, because they're, you know, they're camping. We talk about it all the time. They're committed. They expect bands to push, do something weird, you know, and bands, for their part, understand that, you know, fans are there and you can try and you can do. So my point is, you know, are you thinking outside of the box? Is there something you're going to think, trying to think of something special, or do you know yet?
We haven't talked about it yet, but usually when there's something new like that coming up, we'll definitely put our heads together and think of some stuff to make it special.
And did you mention some of it was probably going to hit the chopping block? Is that just because you're just going to run out of time with a short festival set, probably, right?
We have a song called Chop Shop, and it's just a great song.
Oh.
I just figured we're going to have to play that there. That's all.
All right, cool.
Man, you said what? You got rumors.
All right, so two rumors I stumbled onto Reddit. First of all, one thought that I came across quickly. In a place that hates everything, Reddit doesn't seem to hate you. Yeah. I couldn't find any little, you know, snake, wild weeds of mess. So I thought that was different and refreshing and nice. But so there was one from a couple years ago. They were talking about whoever they is, that you guys got busted outside of Dallas, or on your way to Dallas, somewhere in Texas, that inspired you guys to play Truckin' when you were in Dallas. Some of those lyrics go together with city names and being busted and pulled over. So it's a believable story. Also, ChatGPT could have made that shit up 5 minutes ago. I don't know. Is there truth to that?
That's a true story.
Okay. Could you tell us anything you would like to about that?
You know, it happened, interestingly enough, I think, what was it, the 30th or the 50th anniversary of when that happened to the Grateful Dead?
That's right. That they did say that, too, that it was almost on, like, the same date.
Like that day?
It was, like, the very day.
That's insane.
Yeah. so, actually, luckily, the band was not involved with this. So, we are still perfect little boys that don't do anything bad.
You mean you weren't arrested?
We weren't there. It was actually the crew. The crew was driving across the country, and the band had some other obligations, so we had to fly like the day before the gig.
So the rumor's not exactly true, because they didn't say that, but I'm glad to get it cleared up.
It's a little fluffed up, I'm sure. But remember, the band, we are perfect, so, and we don't do anything bad. So
no,
wouldn't have been us anyway.
But your crew has a bunch of marijuana in the band.
Had a bunch of pot, yeah.
But that went that they there was no major arrest or anything, and you didn't have to go back for, you know, they didn't
everybody
have to...
was cool. Everybody was cool.
Nice.
All right, I'm glad to hear that one's true. I know the next one's true, and I can't wait. Brian, if you want to take this, because I've heard you talk about it before, or Jeremy, either one of you or both. I was blown away and thought this can't be true, and looked it up, and it was. Did you have a song with lyrics written by Tom Marshall? Tom Marshall, the primary lyricist for Phish, a la like Robert Hunter for the Grateful Dead. That's true. That's correct. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Make sure before I went any further. Tell me about that, please. What a wildly cool, just factoid to know. How does that come together? Are you friendly with, more than acquaintances with Tom Marshall? And just as much as time as you'd like to spend on that, little as, or as much, I would be fascinated to hear about it.
Yeah, so we met Tom through, I think the first time we met him was in Atlantic City. We played on an Osiris podcast recording while Phish was in town. in Atlantic City doing their beach gigs there. And then, you know, ran into him a few more times, like around Asbury Park, and you did a Fish gig, at, like a Fish tribute gig at the Ardmore.
The band that is Reprise now. That was essentially the beginning of that band.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and I saw them recently, and they were incredible at the Broken Bowl in New York.
Yeah, Reprise is a Fish song, is it?
No. Well, it's based off Tweezer.
And the Reprise, Tweezer Reprise, yeah.
I forget, like, how it happened. It lined up somehow where someone was like, oh, yeah, Tom would love, like, to go on our friend's boat. And we just, like, ended up on this boat together. And
you're hanging out with the lyricist from Fish.
Yeah, it was like a fishing trip. But we weren't fishing. We were, like, in the cabin showing each other songs and stuff. And we were practicing the song Evolve, which Fish had already started playing. But I think Tab was just about to play or just had started playing. So him and I were sitting down and working out harmonies to that song. And because he originally was like, oh, let's do a song like Ghost or Waiting in the Velvet Sea. Sorry, I have to backtrack. Sometimes I'm not too good at telling stories in order.
Hey, man, it's fine.
We were going to do a podcast, a live podcast and performance at the Stone Pony with Tom and RJB, who's another great guy. And that would be the afternoon before Train to Stasio Band plays on the outdoor stage at the Stone Pony. So we had to prepare a song to play with Tom for him to sing on. And originally he had suggested some other Fish songs, but I was like, oh, let's do a new one, you know? Let's do one that's like fresh that people will be excited about. And so we played the song, got it done. We played it that day. And then later on, I think Tab either debuted it for Trey Anastasio Band that night. They at least played it, and that was really cool. Really cool moment to be part of. And then one day I just texted Tom. I was like, hey, if you ever have any stray lyrics or anything, send them my way. I would love to, you know, take a crack at it with, like, writing a song. He was like, well, there's this song called You Didn't Hear It From Me that I wrote with this guy, Anthony Kryzan. He played in the Spin Doctors, and he sent the song to Jimmy and I, and we really liked it. And so I showed it to the band, and we quickly learned it and started playing it. That's become a part of our catalog that we play and jam on. And then we actually went on another boat trip together, where we went from Charleston. We were supposed to go up to Jersey, but the trip got cut short because of an insane storm. Like, I don't even know if I told you. It was, like, the craziest storm I've heard. It was wild. Started working on... He pulled up some lyrics that he had already started working on. And it was... The theme was, like, unfocused. And so I started playing some stuff to it on the boat, and... I don't know. Long story short, that song became unfocused. And we worked on it over time. And then one day, him and I and Anthony went up to Anthony's studio in Raritan, New Jersey, and completed it that day, along with some other songs that are in the works. Started playing it recently. I think we debuted it on New Year's Eve. Slowly but surely it's... finding its legs, and you know, it's a good jam vehicle for us to delve into.
Yeah, my last follow-up on that real quick is that you were talking to another podcast that I just stumbled on for a minute, Brian, about how Tom Marshall had talked about that, what was it, something like 9 out of 10 songs are just throwaways, like, or something. It's some kind of philosophy of like, you just got to churn and burn and keep going through all this stuff, because a lot of these things aren't going to be as good as you think you are. And it seemed like you kind of agreed with that from your own experience. How is that like to be trying to work in an industry? I never really thought about it in that way, it's almost like a baseball average. You know, 3 out of 10 is good, is pretty good, when 7 times it might not be what you wanted. The fact that a guy like Tom Marshall says something like that, of course he's got a lot of material probably, but your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with it. I mean, for me personally, there are hundreds of song ideas in rotation that I just have in my head or on my phone in voice memos that, you know, you try to figure out if it'll work for the band, but like, you're not really sure. He told me that's Trey Anastasio's kind of logic with writing songs. He says, you know, out of 20, you're going to get one that's like maybe good.
And yeah, that could be so soul crushing. I got to come up with 20.
Yeah, but what's inspiring about that is he does, you know, everybody that knows Trey says he just writes all the time. He wakes up at 4 a.m.
It's all day.
Drinks coffee and just writes every day. And I find that so inspiring, like just constantly keeping that creative light on is really cool. And just letting, you know, he says he likes to keep it in the realm of improvisation too, where like, yeah, if it's not great, just let it go. And that allows me to have a little bit more of like the sense of fearlessness with writing recently. Is that, you know, not everything has to be so great, you know, have to use it. But chances are, if you're sitting down and constantly letting that inspiration in, by having a pen in your hand, you know, you're more likely to get something great because you're putting in the work. A lot of songwriters talk about that, that you can't just like wait for inspiration. You have to actually sit down, and the chances are you're going to get it way quicker. But there are times where you're just walking down the street and you think of an idea or a concept for a whole song in one shot. And those are the best moments, but they're rare.
It's always fascinating me to talk to songwriters and they'll say, I didn't think that was the one that was going to connect. You know, I thought this was the better song, but this is the one that connects. And that to me is, you know, how could you not, how did you not know that was going to be a great song?
How can you not see my brilliance over here?
Right.
Yeah, I could.
And it's not up to you if it's going to be
right.
What
yeah.
works and connects with people or not, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of the Rick Rubin thing. Well, I mean, I guess that Rick Rubin goes a different direction on that too. Well, I won't go down that road, but agree or not, Fish is in the nomination discussion and officially for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's a reason why they've licked this jam band thing in the modern era as good as anybody. And to have that much interaction with Tom Marshall, who is
cool.
Instrumental to that success, is such a cool story. I don't have much else. Barry, what do you got? We can wrap it up and get you guys back out on the road. And then thank you so much for your time.
Can't thank you enough. We'll see you Wednesday. We'll see you tonight for those who are listening just now. And we'll definitely see you on the farm. And I cannot wait.
Sorry,
I
one
think
more.
You're about the most perfect band to be hearing on the farm. So
yeah. Guys, this isn't us just blowing smoke. It's been a fun week catching up on your music. I'll see you at Chattanooga tonight. And I know this is lame and loserish, and I'm going to do it anyway. I ain't telling you what to do, but what I am going to say is and I know it's newer, and I don't know, it might be one of your more popular songs. All the same, that thing's a freaking masterpiece. If I were to hear that in Chattanooga tonight, you might have a dog forever.
Nice.
You might have a dog forever anyway. Just saying. Just
nice.
Saying.
You're already putting in requests.
It might just line up with the show gap, because we did play it recently.
If I had the emoji, the praying hands emoji. I'm just saying. I'll be there tonight. It's going to be fun. We know one of the talent buyers for that venue was a longtime member of our Bonnaroo camp and music promoter in the Southeast.
Yep.
And he's the one who helped me get together with you guys. It's a great venue, and boy, it's going to be fun. Can't wait. And just keep that in mind if you don't care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. They were very gracious to join us on a Sunday from Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, we do this at 11 o'clock on Sundays. Just not ideal for a lot of people, especially if you are doing a late night show and you're on a bus traveling to the next city. To jump up at 11, well, it turned out to be noon. It's fine. At noon, that's cool. That's a lot to ask. I feel like that's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
And
it was awesome. I'm glad, as often happens, you know, the last question ends up being sort of the money shot. And it was fun to hear them talk about writing with Tom Marshall.
Tom Marshall. Yeah, from Phish. When I saw that in that Reddit thread, and I saw nobody say, hey, you guys are liars.
Yeah.
Where'd you make up that dumb story?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it wasn't a bunch of super fans who also didn't know. But I thought, holy wow. I mean, what a way, you know, just to stumble into such an opportunity of just meeting somebody. And next thing you know, yeah, here's some lyrics.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, like, that's like a Robert Hunter from the dead.
Here, finish this.
Who no one's ever heard, you know, who, a lot of people don't know who aren't big into the Dead. Jerry Garcia wrote some lyrics, certainly for the Jerry Garcia Band, but not near really all that many for the Grateful Dead. Robert Hunter did, and or a Bernie Taupin for Elton John. Like, so it's not usual, but when it is, it's legendary.
Yeah,
right. It's like you deserve your own award, and Tom Marshall is that guy for Phish, and for their early on in their career to be able to run into that guy, impress him enough, and then trade notes. And I think there was more than just that one collaboration. How damn cool is that?
That and just looking at their resumes, these are very talented, trained musicians. Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, classically trained.
Yeah. I mean,
School of Arts, Berkeley, Philadelphia School of Arts. I didn't want to go into that with them too much because, you know, like, they don't, we all went to school. We're pretty good. What else do you want me to say?
Well,
you know?
But I mean, when you throw around like their list of inspiration, Coltrane, Miles Davis, Zappa, Jaco Pastorius, Buddy Rich.
They were raised right.
There you go. There you go. That's, don't know how else to say it.
They were raised right.
All right. That was a lot of fun. So hope you guys enjoyed that as much as we did. We will be back next week. Russ should be back. And guys, get your steps in, start hydrating, and start making your Bonnaroo pile. Get all that stuff out of the closet and make sure the rats haven't eaten it.
About time.
The stuff is there that you think is there. Don't wait till the day before.
Sure. Should have already said this on at the tail end of the interview or the beginning of our close here. Thank you so much, Kevin and Ross from PR and management from Dogs in a Pile, and how accommodating they were to help make that happen. Thank you very much.
Got it together pretty quick. All right, so there you go, guys. We'll see you next week.